Is your business plan very unclear and you're tirelessly working at a low-paying career? Let's help you get out of the rut and let go of the fear. It's time to excel into the million-dollar stratosphere. Now, here's your host of The Balanced Millionaire, who will take you there, Eileen Mendel.
This is Eileen Mendel, and I have a really great show for you lined up tonight. I'm so excited about it. We have a great guest, and then we're going to go to a break, and then I am going to talk about human capital management. Let me tell you a little bit about our mission. The mission of our show is to reach out to company founders and C-level executives of companies committed to long-term sustainable growth without becoming a slave to their business. So we talk about approaches to expansion, and we look at role models and means to take the pressure off, use collaborations, systems, and personnel to keep a high-spirited culture with cooperation and teamwork that is centered around personal balance and a high quality of life. Tonight I have the pleasure of having Greg Voisin as my guest. He is author, he is a speaker, and an entrepreneur. Greg recently launched his book, Hacking the Gap. His primary focus is advising small to mid-sized businesses on their financial management, human capital development, process improvement, and sales and marketing. His company is called Illuminate, and has a team of six associates dedicated to fulfilling the needs of his clients. He is also a podcaster with over 630 plus authors that he has talked to regarding personal growth, business, wellness, mastery, and spirituality. And his podcasts are archived at www.insidepersonalgrowth.com if you're interested. After this podcast, you probably will be. And he's co-authored a book called Wisdom, Wellness, and Redefining Work with John Selby. He has a bachelor's degree in business management from San Diego State University and a master's degree in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. Welcome, Greg, to our show.
Well, welcome, Eileen, and thanks for having me on your show, The Balanced Millionaire. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with your guests this evening.
So, Greg, let's see, should we start out with how you got into the personal growth area?
Sure. Whatever you would prefer. I'll just follow your lead there.
Okay.
So,
tell us a little bit about the history of what you found out as you were working with clientele on their personal growth. And I'm assuming you were trying to develop some leadership skills and also working with companies that needed leadership skills. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, look, when it comes down to personal growth, I've interviewed almost 700 authors on personal growth, spirituality, wellness. And the issue, Eileen, really, all the time when it comes down to it, is there's a consistent area in personal growth that people are always trying to fix. And that is, you know, how do I change habits? It doesn't really matter which habit, it's really to create systemic habits where people can maintain a new habit in their life. And that habit can actually be something that they can ingrain. The second thing is to work with more affirmations and goals and initiatives. So many of the people that I would work with, small business owners, 2 million to 10 million in actual sales, Eileen, what happened with them was literally you'd say, well, they've probably done some strategic planning. But the reality is that they hadn't. Many businesses grow, as you know, without doing some of the things that you and I do, although they could do it much more effectively and they could do it more efficiently and most likely make more profit. So what I found pretty consistent in this market was, well, you know, we're really not using project planning software and we're coming together, you know, maybe once a month. There isn't a high degree of accountability. All the factors that we hear that really have a significant impact on the profitability of these businesses. And all that really stems around personal growth, because those are all new habits that people are trying to create, high performance habits, habits that they can ingrain into themselves and their business and all of the people that work for them to be accountable.
Now, Greg, you have a book called Hacking the Gap that you just launched, and I found that very, very useful. Even though I knew a lot of these different areas, my own experience is that you have to keep reminding yourself to employ these different tools so that you can, you know, effectively use them in your business and everyday life. So talk to me a little bit more about Hacking the Gap and what are the most important tools that somebody who is learning to grow their business needs to have in order to be the most effective leader and successful entrepreneur in their field.
Well, the book actually came as a result, Eileen, of my own personal entrepreneur experiences, both some successful and some failures. Software company, a toy company, a training company, a financial services company. And the reality is in those experiences, I think if you're going to fail forward, fail fast, right? And don't repeat mistakes. And, you know, your listeners have heard this before, but what are the things that people need to know? First off, if you ever have listened or your listeners have listened to some of the greatest business people, Warren Buffett and Steve Jobs and all of the people that have made billions of dollars, what they really are saying is that your intuition is one of the biggest things that is important to you with relation to having your business grow. You really have to hone that. And so people ask me, so what is intuition? And intuition is that sixth sense, as I say. It's that sense where virtually what's happening is people are getting in touch with a thought or a feeling that's guiding them and directing them, and they are discerning enough to really look at that and say, hey, I really enjoyed the opportunity that this particular intuitive thought brought to me, so I followed it through. And the reality is when you do follow those intuitions, you really have some aha moments. You really have some ideas. And I ask people, I've got a little chart in the book, as you know, and there's 8 key areas that people need to focus on. And it really goes down then from an aha moment to recording the idea to implement, or actually I said to incubation. You have to incubate this idea. And we all have ideas. We need to incubate them. And then we have to manage our energy, and I call that ignition, because most small business people or any size business, the challenge a CEO has or a team has is really managing their energy, and that's around igniting it. And then they basically have to innovate it, right? They have to go out and test it. They have to see if it works, if this idea works. It doesn't matter if it's a product or a service or whatever it is. And after they do that, once they perfect it, then they have to implement it. And I tell people the implementation is one of the hardest phases in the cycle of Hacking the Gap. And the whole premise behind the book, Eileen, is this, One, it is basically saying, how do you go from point A to point B in the evolution of your business with the least amount of resistance and the highest amount of personal and professional growth? And while that maybe sound like a pretty complicated thing, it's pretty easy. I can distill it down. Most people want to take this journey, but they don't want a ton of resistance. So if you learn from others, if you read the greatest, you know, business people, the Peter Druckers of the world, the Bill Gateses of the world, the Warren Buffetts, the Steve Jobs, whoever it is that you love reading, you basically are going to learn a lot. Take those lessons and apply them to your own business and try and shorten that distance without the resistance. It is that resistance that we have internally, the fear that we have. That's the other thing. You have to let go to become a good business person. You have to follow your intuition. You have to let go. And you have to understand that there will be some mistakes along the way and learn from those fast. And as I say, fail forward, move forward with them.
I think when I had my first real business, pretty much I was fearless. I was young. I was in my 30s. And what occurred to me was I would have these intuitive brainstorms. My partner would hate these brainstorms. He goes, "You're at it again." But it always led to another level. I would brainstorm, let's get in the papers. And so we got a cover article in the San Francisco Business Journal. I would say, let's try to get on NPR. We got on NPR. Let's write some books. We wrote books. And back then, not that many consulting firms or consultants had written books. So we were a novelty. So I just followed my impulses of where my own intuition was taking me. But that was, I didn't know exactly what I was doing as a vetted system, but I'm glad you wrote this book because you systemized what was actually happening to me and occurring in my first business. And now I use that to structure and implement what I'm going to do in my own business, which is currently more a one-on-one coaching with companies as well as individuals at the C-level. So this is really, really, very helpful to understand that there is a process to the whole system of getting to know yourself better, tapping into your intuition, and then going from, like you said, implementing it, managing the energy, don't resist. Look at it as an opportunity, because as an idea flows through you, that could be your entree to your next level, your next step in your career and in your life.
Yeah, and I just for your listeners, it you know, some people won't get this. This isn't what I call sappy stuff. This isn't just new age kind of stuff. This has been around for eons, and I think one of the other things that I mentioned in the book, I look at what is the mental mindset? What are the mindset of the people? And I give lots of applications for mindsets. And one of the things that I kind of advise people of is if you go back to the days of Rockefeller Napoleon Hill, they were talking about doing mastermind groups. And, you know, we kind of lost that somewhere along the way, but it's come back again. And I think two or more people gathered, and in this case, it should be 5 to 6 people, having an opportunity to have advisors and bounce ideas and concepts off of one another, almost like a big think tank, and asking advice is so invaluable in today's market because everything is moving at lightning speed. And before, you know, you've thought of it, you know, someone else is thinking of something and they're changing it or modifying it. And so you need these advisors so that you're not only a good business person, but a futurist. Where's the market heading? And these things are really important. And I point out all kinds of things in the book besides just that, but I did want to mention that one.
That is very important. And if I, as I'm reading a book about how Ford and Edison and Harvey Firestone, Uncommon Friends, it's called, were able to grow their firms. They each had a specialty that they were able to contribute to each other's businesses. For instance, with Ford, his relationship with Harvey Firestone was to get the rubber tires on his cars. His relationship with Edison was to think about, instead of expensive electric cars, to make cars that were running on gasoline. And that was all Edison's work in showing that that was more cost effective and able to lower the price of cars for the common person. So it all worked out if you have the right cast of players in a mentoring sort of support relationship.
Yeah, it does. And I think the most invaluable and element of that is really the feedback loop. You know, when you invent a new product or a new idea and you take it out to clients, you wouldn't do it blindly without getting feedback. And then you wouldn't take that loop out again and get additional feedback. And I think that's true with entrepreneurs in anything they're doing. They're trying to get feedback from people in the business arena on what are the things I could implement in my business that would make it more efficient, make people more accountable or hold them more accountable, and help me improve my what I'm going to call timing to market, right, on any new products I'm developing, because it's just so important today to innovate and innovate wisely, but also innovate rapidly. And if you don't have that mindset about making mistakes, you're not going to innovate very rapidly. You're literally going to hold back and you're going to be afraid.
And I know that there's many people out there listening that are starting their very, very first business. And that is definitely something that I find when you're starting your first business, there's a fear of failure, a fear of making a misstep, of wasting time and money. But without the proper support, that's exactly what happens. They end up wasting a lot of time and money and going down the wrong path. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I'd say one of the things to do when you're starting a new business, unless you've asked family and friends as for investment, you know, do it within your means. If you're going to start a business where whatever savings you have or money you can invest, you know you could lose, right? Exactly. Even if it's a garage business or if it's whatever it might be. The point is that know that you have a limit and do it within your means, because a lot of people are starting businesses as side businesses, and those side businesses turn in to be full-time gigs for them, jobs. You know, they become entrepreneurs as a result of that. But, you know, when you're testing, just put a financial limit on it, unless, you know, I see these people go out and go, oh, well, I'm going to go raise $1 million to do this. And they've never done it before. Well, one should try it on a smaller scale first before you go raise $1 million and you lose all your investors' money. And now you're sitting there, because that's one of the worst things that could happen is now you've gone out. Yeah, you were successful at raising the money. You lose the money. And now you have to go back out and get money again. And once you've lost money, you've kind of lost a little bit of face too. That doesn't mean that you can't get money. All I'm trying to say is it makes your trajectory a lot easier if you hadn't lost the money, if you had some return for your investors.
I'm thinking of a company that recently connected with me that had a software app. While the two young gentlemen that started the company are still, one is employed and the other one is about to graduate from college. But I was really consumed with the fact that you're both working, one is working on finishing up college full time, the other one is working in a job full time. They're using their weekends and after hours to build an app, and then they're raising money on a business plan that they haven't done a lot of market research and real research on and to their competition to look at angel investors to put into that venture. And I was like, whoa, let's step back here. You don't have a full-fledged company. You only have a software that you haven't invented, tested out in the marketplace. What is your thought about that? What would you say to these gentlemen, these two young men?
Well, I think you've said it, and that was, you know, make sure that you know the market as well as you can. You're never going to know everything about any market, but do your homework, stay within your means, stay focused on one vertical market. Don't get too spread out. Don't, you know, try and cover the globe with whatever it is that you have. So if you have a widget that fixes something or you have an app that fixes something, great, and maybe you're not getting traction with it, don't move on to the next one yet until you've given it a long enough run and figured out whether or not it's going to be a success or a failure, or you find a niche market for it. You know, I just interviewed a gentleman who wrote a book called Now What? And he is a billionaire who created Axiom and then a company called First Orion. And, you know, First Orion was, you know, when people get cell phones today and they pick them up, they virtually are afraid to pick them up anymore because you see all these scammer calls. Well, the reality is they created an app first. Well, nobody wants to buy an app for their phone to do scammer calls. They can pretty much see that. So they sold the idea to Metro PCS. And now it's going to go on to going in, and now it's in all of T-Mobile. So 67 million customers now have this as a result of their tenacity to hang it out. And now it informs all of T-Mobile's customers about scam calls, right? So that's right. A good example of an application where somebody took them about 9 years. That didn't happen overnight, and millions of dollars of investment before they actually were turning a profit.
Well, that's interesting, because the two partners that I spoke with, I said, how long have you been working on this? He said about 6 or 7 months. And I was like, and you're trying to raise several million dollars.
Right.
It was like, I just couldn't believe it, because people hear about success stories, but they don't realize the time and the resources that went into building that success. And finally, having the exit strategy where somebody is going to purchase the company, or you're going to license it out, or you're going to go IPO, or just continue to grow it yourself. I mean, there's so much behind that people get enamored of the end result without thinking of what goes on in between.
Yeah. Well, the important thing, Eileen, to remember is, you know, people say, well, I'm a 10-year overnight success, right? And that,
yes.
And that's kind of the reality. And I don't want to leave your listeners with a bad taste in their mouth that there aren't some of these ventures that come along that within 8 months, you couldn't raise $2 million or $1 million. There are plenty of them, but you have to be very confident. And there are investors that will take a risk with you, provided you've done your homework and you can articulate the business plan, the message, and have a good executive team in place. And I might say that executive team is willing to take one for the gipper, as we say. In other words, they're not being paid the same salary they would be paid if they were on the outside doing something else. They're in it for the long-term equity proposition that company holds, because the stock value is going to go up or something's going to happen on exit. So again, I don't want to leave a bad taste that we're saying, well, all businesses do it. But most businesses I've run into are the 8 to 10 year overnight successes.
That certainly makes sense. So we're almost running out of time. What sort of messages to the business community, there are listeners here, would you like to end your this interview with, so that they can, have more traction in their business, and also after you finish that, tell them how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. First off, thank you for the opportunity to be on the show this evening. I think the listeners would, hone your intuition, develop your intuition. It's so important. And listen to it. Take the time to follow it. Know whether it's a false positive or not. Be discerning of that. Intuition doesn't do a download all at once. It comes in little pieces. And so you get insights along the way, but you have to be open to it. Secondly, do something that you love. I mean, the reality is life is really way too short to be doing things that you don't really like doing. So find something that you really like, because if you're really enthusiastic about something, in Theos, the God inside of you, is propelling you. That's where you're getting the most joy from. Create some kind of plan and change your habits. There's so many habits that people can change. Just small little habit changes make a huge difference. And if people want to know the mental mindsets and applications that I've created, they can reach me through three different websites. One is www.hackingthegap.com. That's hackingthegap.com. They can go to www.gregvoisen, that's voisen.com, or they can go to my consulting website at www.illuminate.net.
Thank you so much for being on our show today, Greg. And I'm sure the listeners will follow up with you, because you have some very important information, both in your books as well as on your website. And you have a track record of helping companies to sort out their personal growth as well as their strategic growth. So thank you very much for coming on today's show. We're going to go right now to a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
I am Eileen Mendel, founder and CEO of The Balanced Millionaire. Who are we and what is our mission? We are a strategic business advisory firm dedicated to advancing leadership and business growth. Listen to what our clients have to say about us.
I was blessed to meet Eileen. She has done numerous things for my business, from giving me professional advice to introducing me to new connections and going as far as finding me new team members. I cannot say enough about her and her business for the help they have given to my company.
I've been working with the Balanced Millionaires team. They've helped me in setting up a concrete plan to get my business to the next level. Eileen is a cheering, inspiring, and benevolent advisor. Knowing that she's gone through the same challenges give me the confidence that I'm on the right track.
If you are a growing 7- or 8-figure business that is ready to reach new heights, contact us at info@thebalancedmillionaire.com. That's info@thebalancedmillionaire.com.
Hello, everyone. We're back from our break. And right now, on this second segment of our show, I still have Greg with me, so he can chime in whenever there's some information that he wants to add to what I'm saying. But I'm going to talk to you about human capital management from the perspective of my own experience. So in general, there's 5 categories of human capital besides, if you're an employer, that you will want to know about and make sure, you know, and look at for different needs and different aptitudes and needs in your business. So the first category is vendors and contractors. Those are independent businesses. The second category is subcontractors. Those are 1099 individuals that come in as a subcontractor or consultant. The third category is part-time employees, and part-time employees may or may not be entitled to full benefits depending on how many hours they work. And there's full-time employees, or FTEs, which are the most costly and can make or break your company. And finally, there are temps, which generally you find through agencies. They're fill-ins. So I'm going to go into the first category. And Greg, you feel free to chime in from your own experience.
Sure.
So the first category is vendors or contractors that have independent businesses. So that can be companies that have multiple employees, but they specialize in a certain niche that you are looking for that you can't fulfill internally. And my recommendation for these vendors or contractors are to get at least three competitive bids from them, because they may be coming from different angles as far as value and pricing. So you want to do side-by-side, a checklist of side-by-side criteria for each vendor or contractor. And in addition, you want to be doing a due diligence of your BBB search ratings, the Google searching, their websites and social media, licenses, and other current information to make sure they have everything in order. Is there anything you could add to that? And also, you want to get some references from them. Anything you could add to that, Greg?
No, I think that you're on a good track there, Eileen, with your advice that you're providing your listeners. But I will chime in if I think I can add to it and give you some concrete advice for the listeners.
And my other advice to you when you hire a vendor is to try them out on one small project first before you hire them for a bigger project. The second category are what we call subcontractors. You basically should interview them as if they were going to be your employee, although they may not be interested in being your employee. But you have to do that thorough check again, get the resumes, find out what their work experience is and who else they're working for, because you don't want them to be working for a competitor and sharing any information, whether advertently or inadvertently. Have them sign confidentialities, of course. You want to find out the types of project, whether it's the same type that you're looking to get done in your firm, and how long they've been in business for themselves, as well as get their references. Again, three or more references, which you need to check out thoroughly. More likely references from other companies that have used their services. And also Google them. So make sure that they're good at what they do and find out their pricing well in advance, how they price, if they price by the project or price by the hour. My next category is the part-time employees. Now, the part-time employees, you do definitely need to get their resume. You definitely need to interview them, as well as get three or more business references. You also want to know who else they are working for, if they're currently working for somebody else, such as they're a school teacher part-time, and then the rest of the time they're working as an admin in your company, for instance. So you want to find out where their time commitments are, so that they don't show up late or they, you know, can't, you know, be there when at the appointed times or commit to the appointed work. They have to be very committed to your company and understand what your company is all about. And if they're looking for that part-time job, it would be nice to know, are they looking only for the part-time job because maybe they're a mom, maybe they're semi-retired, or they have some other story that makes sense. You just have to put it all together and see if it all makes sense and whether they're committed or are they just there for a paycheck. Also check their social media, including their LinkedIn as well as Facebook profiles, to find out a little bit more about what their interests are and whether they truly are committed to your purpose or mission in your firm. And finally, there's the full-time employees. The full-time employees, to me, I think of them more like a marriage contract because that's highly regulated by the state and federal laws. the compensation is usually tracked both locally and nationally, and it's based on experience and education. You need to get their resumes. You need to get look at their social media, validate their education, get three or more references. You have to be very, very careful when you're hiring full-time employees. You put them generally put them on a probationary period of 3 months. You have to track them through evaluation forms and both qualitative and quantitative measures that are well documented. So, and you have to keep all their information for your employees, whether part-time or full-time, in secured files. So, because you will have their social security number and their address and phone numbers, so you want to make sure the files are locked files that are definitely secured, because they want to be protected from identity theft or other abuse of their files. In addition, if you do need to give them warnings or fire them, you'll have everything documented in your files. And finally, there's the temp situation, which I would very much caution you on using temps. In my own experience, use temps only as necessary. For instance, if you have somebody who's on a short or long-term leave for disability or medical reasons, and you need to have someone fill that spot, or in a pinch, you need somebody to be at the booth during a trade show, that's good reasons to have a temp on hand, especially if you have a trade show that's not in your area. And so it doesn't involve travel expenses, paying for travel expenses for your own employees. You can hire somebody locally that is in that area. However, the markup for the value delivered is usually quite high, because the agencies themselves have to make money as well as pay the contractor or the person who's the temp. And generally, the person who's a temp is not committed to your company. They're only there for the pay. Although they might like what they're doing, may be excited, in the end, they just are looking for a paycheck. So that's the employer side of the coin. And now I'm going to address what I consider the employee side of the coin. So if you're not thinking of running your own business, if you're an employee, even a C-level employee, you want to look out for certain things, which I call the bad boss or the boss from hell. So this is from my experience, what I've looked for, and the bosses that I've had that have not been totally ideal as my boss. One category is micromanaging. Are they there to watch you and instruct you and be there thinking that you can't make a move without their permission? Or are they going to let you have some freedom to act and use your own judgment? Are they going to give you the authority to make some decisions? Because if someone micromanages you, you feel like a prisoner. So that's one aspect that you have to look at. Are they allowing you creativity and freedom to make decisions? The next thing is controlling. Do they see you, and usually you could detect this during the interview, do they see you as a threat to their position? For instance, if you're coming in as a director and they're a vice president, do they see you as climbing the ladder faster than them, perhaps even replacing them or jumping over them to the next level? That's an insecure sign of insecurity, and it's a factor that many, I've seen it in women bosses. I'm sure there are men out there also that have seen it in male bosses, or women that have seen it in male bosses. But I feel like if you're going to be in that situation, it's not going to work out. Because if you have creative ideas, if you have an initiative to get things done, that's a threat. That frightens them. The next thing that I've had experience with is, will that boss be stalking you constantly and looking over your shoulder? Are they distrustful? For instance, when I was interviewing with a couple different companies in my younger years, the actual hiring manager sat in on the interview with the subordinates that were going to be at my level. And I thought, wow, they are watching every word. They're monitoring this entire conversation. Again, it's a sign of insecurity. They know that there's something that they're trying to hide that they don't want you to know about until you're on the job. So watch out for that. The next thing is you want to also see what their policies are. And this is a hard one to detect until you actually get into the company. But are they distrustful? Are they stingy? For instance, I had a boss that locked up all the paper, pens and pencils, so that you had to go to her to ask, may I have a pad of paper and either a pen or a pencil? They thought you were going to go ahead and get into that cabinet and swipe everything out. I mean, that's distrusting your own employees. And I know there's some people who would take advantage of that, but come on, you know, most honest people will not be hoarding pens and pencils and bringing that home with them. It's just, that's a way to get fired. So let me tell you, in my own case, my ex-employer, my ex-boss, had used my own fellow colleagues that were at my level to spy on me and report back to them. So is there a competitive cutthroat atmosphere that you can feel? And you might not be able to feel it during the interview, but you see it immediately, where your competition, your fellow people that are supposedly your colleagues, we're supposed to be reporting each other and working as a team, are actually backstabbing you. So that's a sign, again, that your boss has put that culture into play and deliberately made you feel paranoid, because you know that your colleagues are out there, you know, and being told, you know, they'll be rewarded to spy on you. And you don't want that to be happening. So that interferes with your whole way of producing the best work you can possibly produce, because you don't know, or you can't even communicate on an authentic level with your own colleagues, because you have to figure out who's your enemy and who's your friend, or who's your frenemy, someone pretending to be your friend. Now, I had a boss that also monitored whether I was at my desk at 7:30 a.m. sharp, and she was watching whether or not I was eating at my desk, which was a no-no, which I didn't know until she actually came in while I was having my bagel and coffee for breakfast and told me, you're not allowed to eat at your desk. Well, this gets to be kind of ridiculous, because I was working while I was eating to be more efficient. So if someone doesn't see the advantage of an employee who is working through their lunch or breakfast or lunch, or even their dinner at their desk while they're working, because they want to continue to put in more time into a project and get it in on deadline, I don't know what to say. I mean, that seems outrageous to me that somebody would attack you. And at the same time, you have to be sitting at your desk at 7:30 a.m. sharp, which, okay, that's, you know, when the workday starts. But why sitting at your desk when maybe you could go to do some research at the company library or ask a question? I was a market research analyst, a senior market research manager. Ask a question of the vice president of marketing, be talking to him about some of the issues that I found in my research. I mean, it was getting a little bit ridiculous to be a prisoner and chained to my desk until they passed by to see whether I was working at 7:30 in the morning. Then I want to know what the mentality is of somebody, a boss, that takes credit for their own employees' ideas. Now, my goal when I'm working for a company, and when I've worked for a company, which I have not done in years, is to make my boss look like a star. But that backfires when you have a paranoid kind of atmosphere. So my boss would take credit for what I conceived of to be innovative ideas that would move our department forward, that would help the company in general. So when you're looking to work with a company, you've got to really pay attention to what is the atmosphere, what's the culture. Look for the signs and signals. Use your intuition, as Greg spoke about, to develop a sixth sense about what you're getting into and how far you can go in that company. You might even ask outright during the interview, what is my next step beyond this position once I've successfully transitioned into this position and done a good job? What would be my next step in the career ladder as this company grows? So that's my take on the capital management. Anyway, I would like to thank the audience for listening tonight. It's been a pleasure to share the information with you. And if you want more information on my company, and as I said, our mission is to work with company founders and C-level executives to help them scale their businesses by cutting costs, raising funding, strategic alliances, and other strategies. And we feature role models to take the pressure off, as well as tools that you can use in collaborations, systems, and personnel to keep a high-spirited culture. So thank you for joining tonight's show. It was my pleasure to speak to you tonight. I hope you have a very nice evening, and thank you for joining us. And you can find me at thebalancedmillionaire.com, www.thebalancedmillionaire.com, or you can email me. I'd like to hear your comments at info@thebalancedmillionaire.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Balanced Millionaire with your host, Eileen Mendel, CEO of InnerEdge International, business consultant, multimedia marketing expert, renowned speaker and author. Connect with Eileen Mendel, The Balanced Millionaire. Increase your confidence, creativity, balance, awareness, direction, motivation, and catapult your business to the next level and beyond.